guys. It's Al from TSO. How are you?
I am great. Delighted to hear from you today. How's it going out there on the road? Or you're not quite out yet, are you?
Not yet. We're leaving next week for full-blown production rehearsal. So a couple more days home with my girls, and then it's back to work.
Where do you guys rehearse?
Either in New York City or in Tampa is where we've been doing the band rehearsals for the last month. But it will be in Omaha, Nebraska in a couple days, and that's when we'll just hit it big time with the production and everything.
How do you pick Omaha? Just out of curiosity, what's there besides a production stage?
It's kind of in the middle of the country, so we don't have to paint ourselves into a corner of where to start.
There you go. You know,
so everything's kind of like drivable from the first night out. We used to rehearse down in Lakeland, Florida, but you know it had to be 800 miles to get anywhere. So we were always starting there and playing in the South in the beginning of the tour, and we wanted to be able to mix it up a little bit more. And Omaha is just a great community, and they have a venue there that can actually accommodate both bands simultaneously. So we set up both stages at the same time.
Oh, that's cool.
That's cool. It's probably the only time they see each other for the rest of the season, right?
Exactly. It's like a bizarre mirror image of yourself. It's like, all right, that's kind of weird.
That's great. So now this is the 20th anniversary of TSO being out on the road, right?
Yes, ma'am. 20 years has gone by
that's
in about
crazy.
20 seconds.
It's pretty amazing. When did it grow enough to have the East Coast, West Coast bands? Because you didn't start out that way,
year.
Right?
99, we did our first tour, and I think there were 7 cities on that. And we thought, God, this was so much fun. We had, you know, one little truck and a couple fog machines, and we thought we were the coolest thing ever. And then the next year, promoters from all over the country wanted a show. Obviously, like the 13 colonies is where we kind of got started. And, you know, promoters in Seattle and L.A. and San Diego and San Antonio, Salt Lake City, Denver, they all wanted shows as well. And it's like, dude, there is absolutely no physical way to get from Boston to Seattle.
Right.
Which
yeah.
is not going to happen. So the original band, the 6 of us, we basically said, all right, you 3 stay here, us 3 let's go this way, and you know we'll find a couple extra singers and we'll figure it out.
That's pretty incredible, and what you've expanded into has been pretty amazing.
It is kind of crazy. But listen, I always compare it to, you know, like anybody who has children. You know, in infancy, it's one thing. There's a lot of diapers, there's a lot of panic, there's a lot of anxiety, and there's a lot of uncertainty, and, you know, kind of like, well, what's going to happen next? And then into young adulthood, it's been just kind of an incremental journey over 20 years. So, you know, Paul O'Neill, he created this thing. We started recording in 95. 4 years later, we did our first show, and here we are all these years later, and I think it's 104 shows this year in like 60 cities in 40 days.
Oh, my goodness.
This will be the second tour now that you guys have done since you lost Paul last year. And how have things changed like within the TSO infrastructure, you know, I mean, not having him there?
Well, his family's been by his side for years. You know, I mean, Paul and his family have been kind of running the show for a long, long time. Professionally, you know, we had a great year last year. It was very bittersweet. Mm-hmm. It was hard to kind of get through some things because emotionally, I can only speak for myself. I mean, I can only imagine what is going through his daughter's mind and heart and his wife's mind and heart, you know, on a personal level.
Mm-hmm.
Me, I lost my best friend and my boss and my partner in crime. You know, he and I have been friends since 1985, you know. I miss him every second of every day, but every time I put that Les Paul around my neck and I walk out onto a stage, you know, he's there with me.
Yes.
You know, every pyro hit, every laser blast, every note that I play, every lyric that's sung by the singers, he's alive through his music. And all Paul ever wanted was this, to live long past all of us. I'm just pretty certain that none of us wanted that to start now.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Exactly.
You know, but listen, his wife and daughter are like the most amazing people. He's got an incredible family, and they're steering the ship. And last year, we had a great year. This year, from what I understand from management, you know, we're selling more tickets now than we did last year. You know, people love his work. The only thing, you know, I hate to give it a definition, but, you know, I've been going to Disney World since Walt was still alive.
Yeah.
There you go.
You
know? Yes.
And now I take, you know, my older kids I took there. Now my younger girls, you know, we go there. And it's, you know, it's got to be 50 years since I've been there for the first time. And it's still magical. And it's still there. And it's still getting bigger. And it's still evolving. And Paul always admired Walt Disney. Mm-hmm. And, you know, leave it at that.
Well, I guess you probably also feel a certain sense of responsibility to carry on, you know, his legacy, too.
Oh, my God, yeah. I mean, listen, I became his musical director decades ago, and under his tutelage and under his watch and guidance, you know, I've learned to do so much as a leader and as a musician. And now this is his child that once his wife and daughter handed off to me and allowed me to take this on the road. If I had a different bunch of people, I'd be worried, but I have like the greatest band, the greatest crew, the greatest managers. I mean, everybody's going towards a common goal. I really don't have to do much. Everybody is like all pointed in the same direction. Like, this is the trajectory Paul had us on. Let's continue on.
One of the things that strikes me hearing you talk, and I've interviewed several members of you guys over the years, is your passion. Every time I talk to any one of you, you're so excited about it, and it's genuine. It's no BS when I talk to you. How do you attribute that camaraderie between all of you, and what is the magic with us?
Paul's guidance. Paul created something, you know, from the ground up. Those of us who've been fortunate enough to be there from the beginning were all part of something that there were no expectations what it was going to be. We recorded Christmas Eve 1224 in the winter of 95, and all of a sudden it becomes the number one requested song in America, and every radio format, like every different style, everybody started playing it, and the phone lines lit up. And then you do a couple records that were inside that big head of his, and you're watching these things come to life, and all of a sudden you're selling a couple million records, and then you start putting tickets on sale for shows, and people come out in droves. It's kind of like whatever he did worked. I was just happy to be, like, in his employ, you know, and be there to witness this whole thing come to life. So, I don't know. It's like, you know, why do I get excited every time my daughter kisses me in the morning? Because I love every cell in her body. Just, you know, I love Paul O'Neill, and I will love him for the rest of my life. And I love what he's created, and I love what his family's doing. And this has been, listen, I spent half of my life with the man. I care not to reflect on the first half. The second half was awesome.
That's a real friendship, though, when you don't even want to think about the first half so much, right?
Yeah, well, the first half was spent without him. The second half was spent with him. So,
aww.
You know, listen, it's been incredible. It's, you know, ever since I was a baby, I've wanted to do this. And the fact that I've been doing this with Paul, or for Paul, for 25 years, and professionally for 35 years, it's like, you know, breathing. I don't get tired of breathing, because without it, I die. Same thing with playing my guitar.
I feel like, too, though, the fact that you guys are so generous, it's pretty extraordinary when you think that over $15 million has gone to charity. That means you've sold at least that many tickets.
Yeah, a dollar a shot.
That has been so important to you guys. That's one of the things that to me really stands out
and
about
you. And
before
every show, you guys come out, you know, with usually the hockey jersey of wherever city you're in and present the check, and it's always a cool thing.
A couple of years ago, I accepted it here, and it just strikes me as being one of those things about knowing that part of the secret of life is giving back like that.
Absolutely. Listen, my great-grandmother taught me a long time ago, if you go to somebody's house for dinner, bring a really good bottle of wine.
But that's
you
wonderful.
Know, and I remember walking the streets of New York with Paul before or after recording sessions, and every time I turned around, he'd have his hand in his pocket handing somebody a 10 or a 20, you know, just to help out. You know, he didn't need the pat on the back of the thanks. He just wanted to know that maybe this helps somebody get through the night. If they can get through tonight, maybe they can get through tomorrow, and maybe the week, and maybe the month. And he and his family, they want to change the world a dollar at a time, a song at a time, or a show at a time. And I think they're accomplishing that. So, again, it's a privilege to be part of the community and helping the community give back to itself. Remember,
yes.
It's your money that's going back.
That's
We're
right.
just tapping everybody on the shoulder and saying, hey, guys, it's the holidays, dude. People need help. Let's help them.
Mm-hmm. It's a really, really wonderful piece of what Trans-Siberian Orchestra is. What's going to be different now for people that are excited about going this year? Anything that's different? Are there
everything.
Tell us.
Let me take that back. The centerpiece of the show is Paul's story, The Ghost of Christmas Eve.
Right.
And that's become everybody's holiday tradition. Everybody just loves Paul's story, and rightfully so. But the front of the show musically is different, and the whole back half of the show will be different musically, and not to mention the entire staging, the production, all of that. Like, every year we come back with different production, and this year is no exception. It's got to be different, and it's got to be bigger, and it's got to be better than last year. That's what Paul and his family have always wanted, and that's what's continuing on.
Can you give us any hint as to, you know, what the production might look like, or what sort of the theme is? Because if I remember last year, it was sort of like almost like a apartment buildings or condo type of backdrop.
Yeah, like
thing, right?
It was the front of the movie theater, like the marquee.
Yeah, that was right. Yeah.
You know, listen, I'd be lying if I told you anything, because I don't know. I've seen computer drawings of it.
Right.
But so it's like watching lightning on TV, you know?
Right.
I won't know until next week, until I actually walk into the arena and I see it in front of me and go, oh, my God. And no, I'm not going on that lift.
That's really cool that you don't even know at this point. What do you do, Al, the rest of your year? And how much of your year is devoted to this, aside from the 100-plus dates?
Well, pretty much all year long, I'm involved for years now. You know, it takes months and months to prepare for the tour musically. So let's back up. We get home, let's say, at the beginning of January. Everybody takes a couple weeks off. Historically, Paul and his family and the crew and the department heads would start, you know, putting pencil to paper, literally, sketching stuff out for the following year's tour. I would normally be with Paul by the beginning of February down in Tampa working on new material. Then we would start looking by summertime at you know, the set and what we're going to do musically for the next year's tour. So for 20-something years, this has been a full-time job. Now, if I'm not doing that, I'm home with my kids watching Bubble Guppies.
How old are your
kids?
That's
it. That's all my time.
I hope your kids aren't in their teens. How old are they?
Well, no, I'm watching Bubble Guppies with a 2.5-year-old.
Oh, I love it.
And then as they get older, the TV shows get a little bit more interesting.
Yes. That's
awesome.
But
right
awesome.
Now I'm back in square one, diapers and Bubble Guppies and Paw Patrol. I'm back to the beginning again. Thank God. I love every second of it.
Isn't that so? You have older children too?
My oldest son is in his early 30s, who is a sniper in the Special Forces. My 30-year-old is a touring musician. My 23-year-old is in the United States Navy. And then my 7-year-old daughter is just a fashionista in first grade. And my little angel Layla doesn't know anything about anything other than life is great every day.
And Bubble Guppies are real, right? Yeah.
And Bubble Guppies are it. And she's going to be seeing, I tell you what, she's coming to her first show this year. So you want to talk about fun for me. I can't wait to see her expression change when she realizes, like, her Bubble Guppy partner's on stage.
Yeah, right.
That's awesome.
You're going to have a lot of explaining to do after the show.
Exactly. God help us if she runs on stage in the middle of the show. Oh, Lord.
Just make sure she's wearing those headphones. That's
yes, ma'am. Oh, without a doubt.
That's a pretty loud, it's a pretty cool, loud rock show.
It
you
sure
know?
Is.
What about the new album? You guys are re-releasing or letting bringing out something new at the end of November?
Well, yes, yeah, it's the 20th anniversary of the Christmas Attic. So I'm excited because I'm old, and the fact that they're re-releasing it on vinyl is the coolest thing ever.
I love that. I love that we're doing that now.
I am so psyched. It is. First of all, I can't believe that it's 20 years since we recorded that record. There's so many great songs that were on there, and it was such a fun time. But the fact that it's coming out, and listen, I think in 2020 is the 25th anniversary of the first album, you know, Christmas Eve and Other Stories.
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden, we're not talking in terms of years anymore. We're talking in terms of like a quarter of a century. Mm. And this music that Paul created has been important to so many people for such a long time. And I think that, you know, I'm so proud of so many aspects of this. But I think the proudest I am is the longevity and the staying power that it has and how it's just current and pertinent now as it was 25 years ago.
Well, shoot, you can't really see too many holiday commercials without hearing something of yours in there sometimes, right?
No, and listen, I sit back and, like I said, you know, watching TV some nights with the family, you know, and there's a TV commercial, there's an episode of, like, The Office or you know, or there's so many, I just hear it everywhere, and it just makes me proud. It's like, you know, having one of your kids, every time you turn around, is doing something spectacular. That's what this is. You know, these are Paul's children and his family's kids. You know, I'm like just the weird uncle.
Right. Yeah, right. Well, that's a fun way to be, though, right?
Oh, my God, yeah.
Well, Al, we are so looking forward to having you guys back here again. I know there's so many people in Atlanta who make it an annual tradition to go check out the show. So thank you so much for chatting with us this afternoon.
Oh, God. Ladies, I had a great time with you, and I can't wait to. Listen, I love Atlanta. For the first time I was ever in that beautiful city, I fell in love with it, and I can't wait to get back and bring this new show with us, and we're just going to have a great time, I promise.